OTB AM.
For those of you who are listening on the radio, we're watching some amazing slowed down footage of a kittog, Dermot Ling, hurling and surfing at the same time. Ball in the right hand, left hand, wielding the hurl, perfect balance. Dermot, this is a thing of beauty. How the hell did this happen?
Ger, I'm not a kittog, unfortunately. I'm just upside down. I was always told I should change because I'd be slower in my reflexes with my left hand on top. Honest to God, this happened to Martin Quigley, and all these lads were involved with me from a young age used to say, if you don't sort this out and change, you're going to be slower and you're not going to make the level you need to make. And I tried for a while and it just didn't suit me. My father used to say, look, that's how you pick the hurl up, so just stay at it. So I don't know, it suits the surfing a little bit more maybe.
But you do have the hurl in your left hand at that stage. Like, it looks perfectly
that's how I hurled left hand upside down, essentially upside down a kittog. I remember the Galway teams of the 80s, I think there was four or five of them hurled the same way. So I feel like I could justify it when legends like Joe Cooney were doing it too.
I think Jerry McInerney, was he the same?
God, there was a few of them. I don't think Coleman was. McInerney, I'm not sure either. I definitely remember looking at them playing against Tipperary maybe in the 89 final and thinking, oh yeah, a couple of those fellas hold the hurl the same way as I do. But I'm right-handed. It was just always upside down, I was told. But it worked fine in the end.
So this is footage from a new project that you've been working on with Timmy Creed. People might not be familiar with Timmy. There was a great piece that Michael Foley did in the Sunday Times the weekend about Timmy's background. He is a playwright and a hurler and has actually written a play about hurling. So maybe you can explain to us about him a little bit and then about your collaboration after that. How did you get to know Timmy and who is he?
Yeah, Timmy Creed. I met Timmy Creed at a festival. I think it was actually the first festival I ever went to. I was like 31. I didn't make festivals during my time playing hurling. So I went to a festival and I met this fella, and he was a Gaelgore as well, and we had a good chat. And we became friends, and we collaborated a little bit on this play that he did, a one-man show called Spliced. And we would sit and chat about our experiences, and he was talking about playing with Bishopstown and I was talking about playing with Wexford and with St. Martin's, and trying to get a hold of what happened to us in the time and maybe what the influences were from a young age that maybe when we matured into adult players didn't serve us so well. And we both kind of fell out with the game at a certain time and went off and explored different things. So we shared the story, even though it was a little bit at different levels. But when I play hurling on the beach now, it certainly doesn't seem like different levels. But that was how I got to know him. And I was just moved by, blown away actually by Spliced. And that was maybe my own reaction to it initially. But when I saw up in Clare, one of the things that Timmy was trying to do was to bring a kind of a social element to it as well. So once we showed the play, I'd go on the road a little bit with Timmy. And once we showed the play, we'd open it up to the floor then afterwards with GA people from different places. And one of those places was in Clare in a squash court. Usually it's done in a handball alley, an outdoor handball alley preferably, but a handball alley or a squash court or whatever. And James O'Connor and Podge Collins were there. And Podge, I know it would be savvy in the realm of some of the things that come up. There's a lot of maybe a kind of a focus on our well-being as young men playing the game. But I could really see that Jamesy was affected by it, and I was very interested going up there to see how would Jamesy be affected by it. And he was really blown away by it. And people asked like really good questions afterwards. They were like, you know, like they were angry with him for presenting this side of the GA. It's maybe the negative side. There's maybe a little bit more of a negative side of it, but it's also just representing one side that doesn't always get an airing. And I couldn't recommend it enough for GA clubs to show to their younger players to say, this is how it can go. And you have a choice at this stage to not go that way, you know.
I know you don't like us talking in terms of labels, but it does sound like we're talking about toxic masculinity here.
Yeah, and a big time to talk about it. And I mean, this was the joy of doing this a short film with Timmy as well, because we didn't really have a mandate when we started off. It was about identity, but that is a very, very general thing to do. That could be about, it could be about anything. And we just kind of took a camera around with us, Ger, and I would like to have a plan, because Timmy is one of these very creative people who, the moment unfolds in front of him and he responds to it in an artistic way. That's, I think, what artists are. And I maybe need a little bit more certainty, or feel like I do at least. And so with this, we just would take out a camera every now and then. We were outside Timmy's house, and we were maybe going for a surf, and the car needed to be pumped up. Like, the tire in the car was almost flat. But of course, for two fellas who were mad for a surf, you know, that could happen after the surf instead of before it. But of course, Timmy's father saw that the car needed to be done and it wasn't being looked after. And he was like, look, I'm staying here till it's done. And I was looking at this interplay of two men, you know, a son and a father, and the almost like the anger, it's not real anger, but there's just this visceral feeling with Timmy, who's like, he just doesn't want to do this. And he obviously, you know, you've just a certain relationship with your father, and this is going on for years and years. And in the end, when we pumped it up, actually the tire that we changed was flat. And so the father had to kind of weigh back in. So it ended up being about Timmy and his relationship with his father down collecting seaweed and changing the tire. We just turned the camera on at home a couple of times. Siobhan did, my partner, and it was me with Ishna playing hurling or in the kitchen. But none of it was planned. It all just kind of unfolded, and it ended up being completely and utterly about masculinity and about male relationships and about the roles that we have as males, as the son, as brothers and as friends and as fathers. And I was delighted that it happened that way, because we ended up, it ended up being released on Father's Day and also on the solstice, which is like the big time, the big solar masculine energy for those people who are into that kind of thing. That was the time for it.
Why do you feel there is a need for this now at this moment? And why did you feel that this was a story that you guys wanted to share and tell?
It's interesting at the moment. Like, I see on Twitter, there's a lot about, it's coming up. I see in the trad world, in the comedy world, there's an awful lot happening at the moment where Irish women, more and more Irish women are finding their voices with the behavior, with our behavior as men, I suppose. And I'll not to lump us all into one category, but that's what it feels like. It's like you don't really have a voice in it at the moment, because they need to heal and they need their time to say, I believe you, and everybody needs to be, every woman needs to be believed, and that healing is required, and I understand that. But I think sometimes that there is a power and there is a force in men, in the masculine in men, that we can be afraid of, and that we think and can be labeled at times as being inherently negative and dominant and abusive and the patriarchy, and it's always defined as that. And there's that totally and utterly denies the glory of the power of men and their masculinity, and how beautiful and how powerful a thing that can be, and how valuable a thing that can be when steered correctly. So I suppose we just wanted to record something to say this is who we are in our relationships, to be a little bit bare in it, and to not be afraid of it, and to see what would come out in it. And I think that'll always have a value, but it certainly you couldn't but see it in the commentary at the moment. Part of me does want to, you want to take it on, like, you know, because it feels limiting. I feel it feels limiting. I understand the necessity for it, but I do feel like it can be limiting, because the potential is fantastic. Like,
the film itself, when you switch it on, you don't know what you're going to get, right? Because obviously you haven't seen it yet. And I wasn't sure if it was going to be scripted, because in the opening scene you're carrying Timmy out of the water and it looks like this is going to be a play or but like so how do you decide to tell these things? How do you decide that this is going to be watching Timmy juggle, watching the tire get changed, watching the seaweed, carrying him out of the water, carrying your son up to the top of a rock and teaching him to look down and go, ah?
That's the unfolding, Jar. Like, none of that, like, if you look at the shot with Timmy in the seaweed, for example, and his father is in this shape and Timmy is, I don't know if I can do this, but Timmy's like in that shape. Like, he's bending down to one side, picking it up, and Timmy's over behind him. And I just have the camera set up in the distance. That just happened so perfectly like that. With the tire, you couldn't script that. When we went out into the sea and we found John Moriarty's words for that after the fact. But at the time we went out, we just had this idea of an image. But actually when we got into the sea, where we got in was the totally, totally reckless place to go in. And as soon as we tried to lift our feet from off the ground to seem like we were carrying ourselves out of the water, one of us would carry the other out of the water, we were just getting swept out. And that happened a couple of times. And I was like, Timmy, this is completely and utterly, this is reckless. This is dangerous. Cumbie Knoll is one of the most dangerous beaches in Ireland, I'd say. And he said, no, let's do it one more time. And we went one more time. I got a real pull and I got an awful fright because I was getting pulled out and we were swimming with everything we had to try and get back in. And then when we walked in, the shot of walking back in, I am like, I'm at the end of my tether, really, like, you know, and just grateful and delighted to be back on dry land. And we just caught that because I suppose we put ourselves in the situation. So with Ishna the same, that's just something we were climbing and Siobhan took a video and Ishna turns around and he stands up and puts his hands up in the air, which you couldn't have imagined he'd do. And it all just, in each one, the beauty of the moment was captured. And sometimes, and I think this extends out to everything, like sometimes when we overscript our lives, we lessen the chances for this natural beauty to take place. And I think that the film captures some of that. And that may not be interesting to anybody. I understand that. I understand why it wouldn't be in a way. But if you can see what's happening, the nuts and bolts of a relationship between a father and son, and see the interaction between them and see Timmy's expression, like it's all happening on the screen. So it's, I was quite happy with it in the end. And I've never, Sir Jarrah, look at it. I mean, I worked up there with you guys. Like, I wasn't doing any of this kind of stuff. And I was just delighted to be working with somebody whose work I had admired. So it was, yeah, it's been I was happy with it in the end.
Look, I think it is interesting to see two people steeped in hurling talking about masculinity at this moment. For what it's worth, I do think that there has been a toxic masculinity at the heart of Irish society in every aspect of our lives for a long period of time, and that it benefits nobody. It absolutely doesn't benefit young men in particular, like the mental health issues that young men are suffering. And I think this is a separate conversation to the one that's happening at the moment. And I would almost be reluctant to have this conversation right now, because the other conversation that you're talking about, that has to be amplified and that has to be listened to and that has to be supported. And at the same time, like, the response to Timmy's play, I haven't seen it, but I'm dying to see it now. Mm. When you're saying people were angry about it, were they angry about the fact that it was like, go out there and kill your opponent and that's who you need to become a man?
It's much more subtle than that, and it's much more visceral as well. I mean, there's a scene in it, and this was being done at schools around the country as well, which was fantastic, where he's talking about, it's after the game, and it's in, I suppose, Reardon's or somewhere in Cork, he's just describing it in general terms, but it's very much about out with the lads, you know, get the women, like the language of it, and he doesn't hold back in the language of it either, and it's just being very real. And then he's also contrasting that with himself and saying, this is not who I am. Like, I am saying those things, I am acting in that way, I am disrespecting women by how I'm looking at them, by how I'm speaking about them, but it's not me, and I'm just following some kind of, and maybe we're all just following some kind of story. And is this common in GAA clubs for young men? I mean, one of the hardest parts of this, and particularly at the moment with the conversation as it is, as you say, are we even entitled to discuss this at the moment? Maybe not. But that's also a very dangerous thing, because why shouldn't we be, you know, this always should be up for discussion. This always should carry the potential. And Timmy, in the end, outlines the possibilities of how we can move forward, maybe stepping a little bit more into our power and encouraging our young men to step more into our power and to not follow those kind of bullshit stories that we just maybe lazily do. But in the interaction, I find that online, in the interaction at times, it's very difficult. It's very difficult to not get bogged down in terminology and in intellectual who's right, who's wrong. This is my side, this is your side. Like, when I think about how to maybe bring the conversation forward, I know immediately that there's a lot of men who'll be saying, oh, sure, that's like your beta or your, you know, whatever they say about men who've been too much, too influenced by their mothers or by...
Yeah, they're YouTube commenters, though. Like, I agree with you, right? That conversation very quickly can be hijacked by people who want to hijack it. And and actually, art is probably the best response, or education and long-form conversations, where you can tease things out and go, okay, well, what's your understanding of this? What's my understanding of this? Is there a shared understanding? Am I listening enough? Have I done enough listening to the people who are telling these stories? And the urgency with which people are telling these stories, women are telling these stories right now, suggests that a tipping point has been reached. And that can only be a good thing for all of us, to actually begin to learn what our country has been like for women for the last period of time.
Yeah, it's really interesting, because I talked to Richie Sadlier about this before, and it was a really enlightening conversation, because, and I was thinking about it, I went for a surf actually with Timmy this morning, and I was coming out of the water and I was thinking about some of these things, and I was thinking of the conversations I had with Richie, and I can't hold my hand up and say from the time that I was 16 that I'm blemish free, because I feel like I took part in a society where the subtle undertones of the relationship between men and women, at least the ones that I hung around with and that I knew and that I understood from talking to them, was that you couldn't want sex and physicality if you were a woman, and you could if you were a man. That was a kind of a base rule. You couldn't be seen to enjoy it or look for it, because the boys would tell all the other boys, and that would go around the little village, and all the village then would castigate the woman as being a slut or a tramp or whatever. And that's something that happened, you know, very often. But that leads very naturally, and this is what Richie was talking about, was that leads to a woman kind of saying, well, no, I don't want to, but actually she does want to. And you'd kind of understand that as the interaction. Like, I know she's saying she doesn't want to, but maybe she does, but she can't just be seen to say that she wants to. Now, I'm getting into heavy territory here and could be pilloried for it. And sure, if I am, I suppose that's unfortunate. But Richie is a fellow who has gone into great, great depths on this. And I really, it made me feel... I don't want to say that it left me off the hook, but it certainly put language on something that I did feel, was that there was no, it wasn't a malice, or it wasn't like it wasn't an extraction kind of a mentality. It was just like, that was at that time, that seemed like the interaction. But now it's becoming very clear that's no longer the way. Women, thankfully, are finding their voice, and the start of finding their voice at the moment, definitely, it's been going on for a few years now, is to deal with the trauma that's been caused by the imbalance of the relationship. And that absolutely has to be honoured and has to be accepted. And I think we still have to be able to have strong and open conversations about it as men, and not to be afraid of it, because I think there is a fear of weighing in some way, because just to be able to be honest in it is, I think, really, really important. I know this is far away from sport, but I think we have a huge opportunity in the GA and in other sports to maybe shape the change in that. And I've seen it there amazingly, I suppose plenty of people have, but I've certainly seen it in groups. I mean, I remember going back to Wexford after I came back from travel, and I saw a couple of things happen where I was like, yeah, that's not, and I saw the result of it. I saw a woman picking a fella up on it, And then she got very embarrassed about picking him up on it and said, oh, geez, I shouldn't have done that. And I was talking to her and said, Jeannie, like, that's the gift he needed. Like, you know, he needed that. And he's a fine fella for it now, too. So, yeah, it's
I don't think it's a million miles away from sport. I think that this is actually the architecture you're talking about exists in those WhatsApp groups, and we've seen the evidence of that. You know, we've seen it in very high profile cases, like all around the world in every sports forum, that the hyper masculinity leads to an adoption of poses, and that does not benefit anybody in the long run. And that's why I think your meditation on masculinity is a very interesting little injection into the conversation at the moment. And I do think it's really interesting that it's two hurlers who are doing it. And I think,
I think just for it to be, and for it not to be, and that's what I think sometimes happens, is there's also another performance that comes in that says, I should say this now, you know, that, you know, I believe all women, and I think that men should change, and toxic masculinity is a thing. And the conversation stays at that kind of a level, and that stops it from getting into the nuts and bolts more of us saying, well, this is what it is. Like, I went through this moment, and if you're going to shame me and cancel me and do all of those things, well, nobody else is going to do it. And we're going to have one conversation up here that's saying, oh, yeah, don't do those things. And then, like we did in the 60s and 70s and before here with the shiny doorknob and all kinds of stuff happening behind, we don't make real steps, because it's like every man will come out and say, oh, it's wrong. But we're also doing it. So it's like, what are the nuts and bolts of that? And one of the ways, I think, to do that is definitely for example, myself and Timmy to get together and look at our relationship with our fathers, and look at our relationship with our sons, and look at our relationship with each other as friends and as brothers, and say, okay, this is what I value and this is what I don't value. I'm going to put that forward. And it's not going to be because I want a woman to see it, and it's not going to be because I want to impress somebody. It's just, let's record what the music of what happens is and put that out there. And that was kind of the aim of it.
Yeah, look, I do think that the timing is really interesting, and I hope that it gets picked up and widely viewed. I did want to ask about the surfing. It seems to be something that you've discovered late in life, but that is, you know...
Jeez, Jar, take it easy. Late in life, what do you mean?
There's no surfing in Wexford. That's what I mean. Yeah, you had to escape Wexford.
There's a little bit down in the south, apparently. But yeah, it's really just been, I think, more than anything, maybe a journey back to my body and to physicality. Because after hurling, geez, the hangover from that intensity of sport is really, really phenomenal. And this is the first time, like, I got up this morning at 4:30 and headed off in the car to surf. And I wouldn't get out of bed at 4:30 for anything. Like, but it seems to have captured again something, a physicality that I have and that I look for in myself. But then when you get out there, and the sun is rising over the ocean, and a couple of, like, last 2 months ago, there was a full moon, and it was the brightest full moon in like 32 years or something like that. And we went out and surfed in the full moon. And when you've got a wave, we couldn't really see where we were going very well. But when you have a wave coming in, and the lining, you talk about silver linings, like the lining across the whole front of the wave was moonlit from behind, and it was just, to be out in nature at that time was just really, really magical. And I find that with surfing, it's a nice mix of the very physical, but also you're out in the sea, and the sea is like just big medicine for me, and for, I think, for the majority of people. So it's been a real it's been a nice exploration, Jar, and that helps obviously that I'm in a place where there's loads of it.
Yeah, well, you're looking great. There was one shot that I did want to ask about. Were the cops kicking you out of the water when you were strutting down the road in your wetsuit? Did you know the cops were behind you? What was that?
What was that? I think that was awkward, this year. Like, Siobhan had the camera on me, and I'm walking down the road, and the cops are behind, and I forgot that the cops were behind. They were there to say, like, it was an amazing day in Shreef for surfing, and there was like 15 cars and the cops came, and it was still like, it was in the 5K time. So I was within my rights to be there, but there was probably other people maybe who weren't, you know. Now there's social distance. You can't not be social distanced while you're surfing. So I think it's fine anyway, but they're coming from elsewhere. There's a surfer think nothing to leaving Dublin and driving to Sligo for a wave. You know, yeah. They just don't, that's the way they are. But for us, he just showed up. Again, in the magic of how things happened, he showed up. He asked me what I was doing, and I said I was going out surfing, and that I lived over the road, and there was no problem. But then Siobhan turned the camera on, and I'm walking down towards the camera. And I mean, what do you do when somebody's filming you walking down the road? Only something stupid, and she captured it. And because I can be serious, too serious probably, Jerry. You know, I'm too like very cerebral and philosophical and all those things. And this, for me, I think was important too, to be playful and to not take myself so seriously. And that, so I was cringing at putting that piece in, but because I was cringing, I was like, right, it has to go in because, you know.
Where can people see it?
It's on mountshannonarts.net, the full film. It's 10 minutes. I think I put it up on my Facebook page as well. But on Mount Shannon Arts, they're the ones who commissioned it. We got funded to do it by the Arts Council and by Mount Shannon Arts Festival. So certainly any support that can be given to them is great, and to go to their site and have a look at it. And all feedback and commentary out of it is certainly welcome, because that's all it is. It's something to add to the debate, as you said, and I know you picked up on a lot of it, so I appreciate it, Ger.
Long form conversation, I think, is the answer to all of these things. I certainly, at least, will give us a pathway to some answers, if not the answer. Maybe there is no answer. Dermot, it was great to talk to you. One last thing. Go on.
I was just saying, not 180 or 280 on a tweet. Like, you're trying to articulate these small things in a tweet. Long form conversation certainly is so much more beneficial.
Yeah. You had the word Gizzy on your hurl.
Yeah. And it was on Ishna's too. Did you see that?
I didn't notice that.
Ishna has it too. When I was doing the hurling around the world video, Philip Doyle made me those two hurls that I had, and his brother Pod does that. He etches, burns in. I actually got him to make an amazing gift for Caoimhín O'Rahilig. The fiddler married his lovely wife Kira, and he etched a note, a musical note onto the hurl for him as a gift, and it was beautiful. So he does those, and I asked him for a hurl, and he came back with this beautiful thing, and so he sent one down recently for Ishna as well. And it's a good idea for people who want to what would you call it? Pimp their hurls, I suppose.
I thought in the overarching theme of identity, it was interesting, because I know that at various stages you've wanted to distance yourself from the hurler who was Gizzy and Dermot, who is the person you are now, but here you are in the midst of it, embracing everything.
Yeah, trying not to distance myself so much as integrate it, maybe, and the struggle was probably with the integration at that stage, but I'm not surprised you picked up on that, Ger.
Always great to talk to you.
Yeah, likewise.
Stay well. Thanks a million. All right. Best of luck with the movie.
Take care. Thanks, Ger.